Hi, I'm very happy to be here. Can you put it a bit up? Speaking about issues that are very close to my heart. 3 years ago, I met a guy called Stallman. I don't know if any of you know who Richard Stallman is. Good. After watching him eating his hair during lunch, he said, happy hacking, when I was saying goodbye, and I was like, oh, I really wish. And then he said, well, you are a legal hacker. I started to rethink. He was right. I am somebody that goes into the system. I didn't know much about the system before I went in, and I'm analyzing it, and I'm trying to figure out how the system works in order to point out its failures and in order to try to raise awareness about what we need to fix. Now, the shocking part was, I am getting familiar with my job as a legislator, was that laws are in generally really badly done, very badly done. And I'm saying this because the way it works in the Icelandic parliament is that we, the legislators, and particularly if you, it doesn't matter if you're in the minority or the majority, you get forked over you or like a hailstorm of laws just before the end of each season. Even if there are deadlines, the government never honors it. So I'm waiting for this snowstorm of laws pouring in the last days. And the laws are not made by the parliamentarians. We are indeed not the lawmakers, but the rubber stamp makers. So we don't even have time to read them or analyze which is written by whom. Iceland is small, our scale is like 320,000 people. There are actually more Icelanders living in Canada than in Iceland. And that means that there shouldn't be so much red tape, and there shouldn't be such poor working practices in such a small system, shouldn't there? Anyway, so what I started to think was, why is it so that I don't know who writes what? Why is it so that the laws are written in the ministries, where is the only real platform to reaching some sort of consensus and to have a proper regulatory system on the lawmaking process is in the parliament. When the parliamentarians finally get the laws, we usually make some good amendments on them. However, we just don't have the time. And I've been told by, the seasoned politicians that this is a way to maintain power. And I find this to be absolutely unacceptable. So I'm just telling you, laws in general are very badly written. And so why are people actually protesting everywhere in the world? I just went out in the coffee break and there was protest here just outside this door. And usually when I'm traveling around, I encounter some form of protest. And there has never been as many protests in our world. And if you listen very closely to what people are telling us, is that they are telling us the system is broken. It is just simply broken. And so is it possible to fix it? I don't think so, because our laws are really badly written. And we live in societies where they are based on the rule of law. And so is there any way to fix this? Yeah, I think so. I think it is, because there are so many great minds all over the world trying to find solutions, trying to actually create new hardware for the new systems, because it is not enough just to try to install the newest version of Mac OS into my first Mac that I got in 87. It just won't work. So we also have to rethink our hardware. And I think from what I have experienced by speaking to people all over the world and speaking to people in Iceland, because we had a really good crisis, which meant that we actually had a very powerful discussion about what we needed to do in order to fix our society. The most powerful voice was that we needed to have access to the lawmaking process, that we should be able to tell the people we hire to look after our interests if they were failing us, like there is a certain mayor in Toronto that's a little bit difficult to get rid of, despite the fact that he is a global embarrassment. The only tool we had in Iceland when we were protesting in order to try to get rid of a government that was dangerous to our country was to throw food at the parliament. And, you know, stand there and, you know, put an old Christmas tree on fire from our friends in Norway. But it was absolutely finished. So I went in to try to establish and find ways to write into the legal code we have now that the general public could call for a national referendum or say, thank you very much, you are breaking every promise that you made, I don't want you anymore. But unfortunately, the doesn't matter which party is in power. We had like the first pure left-wing government. Unfortunately, they were broken back by the system because the system is broken. The bureaucrats have absolutely taken over. How many of you have seen Yes Minister? Okay, it's really like that, actually. So I've been very keen on finding solutions, and one of the ways that I've been experimenting with was to actually work on lawmaking globally, because we're dealing with global realities. Everyone in here that is focusing on media understands that the media landscape has completely transformed in the last few years, and not entirely in a good way. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I started to work on something called the Icelandic Motor Media Initiative. Then I did an extensive research with people, you know, like people from WikiLeaks, because they knew how to keep stuff up no matter what, and journalists in the UK, legal experts in the EU Parliament, Mr. Freedom of Information Act in Holland, and because he asked for so many, he used the system so much, he was called that by the bureaucrats that didn't like him. And so we actually went on a scouting mission to look for all the best laws from around the world that actually work. And we sort of cherry-picked the best ones. Some of them we knew worked because of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks had, at the time, this was in 2009 and 2010, managed to keep up the stuff no matter what, even attacks from the Church of Scientology. And anybody that's ever tried to write about them knows that that is a tough one. And it was so incredibly amazing to sit down after we've done all our research in a little hotel room with people from all over the world to hammer out this parliamentary proposal, which for some bizarre reason, and I still don't know what happened, was unanimously adopted in the Icelandic parliament. Every one of the people sitting in the parliament's chamber that night said yes. And honestly, I don't know why. Maybe because we had a really proper crisis and people understood that having good whistleblowing laws, to have proper source protection, to have something that will protect our historical records, to deal with the libel tourism horror that I know that at least one Canadian writer has been forced to stop. A book about the mining industry in Canada had to, because of that libel tourism in the UK. So we're dealing with international global abuses of laws. So to my great shock, I managed to get through the Icelandic Parliament, and it's in law now, the best source protection laws in the world, based on the Belgium law. However, it doesn't matter. Journalists in Iceland can't protect their sources. No journalist in this room can protect their sources if they ever use a telephone, email, or sit on a bus. Or isn't that what they're going to start now? So And no lawyer can actually protect the confidentiality of their clients. The doctors cannot protect the medical records of their patients. And we just simply have to acknowledge this. Because if we don't, we can't do the stuff that I'm really, really passionate about, and that is direct democracy. I think that is the thing, the new hardware for our systems, is that people actually have concrete legal means to participate in reshaping their societies. But most importantly, in the process of the responsibility of co-creation, we had a really interesting experimentation in Iceland where the nation was giving an opportunity to participate in creating our new constitution. It was an amazingly beautiful experiment, and it had so many beautiful elements. Like we had, it started off with a national meeting or assembly where 1,000 people were randomly selected from the National Registry. And they got to sit for a whole weekend to discuss what sort of society do we want to have reflected through our constitution. And then we had a constitutional council that worked through these ideas, and then in the end we had an incredibly amazing new constitution, because our current constitution is a recycled constitution from the Danish king. And we used to be a Danish colony, so I just feel insulted every time I see it. So what happened in the last hours, in the last couple of days of the last parliament, we had elections in April this year, was that the new leaders of the left, they had just created, elected new leaders there, and the young leaders of the right and the center decided to slaughter it. And we are not going to have this new constitution. We might have some sort of remix of it, but this piece, this historical piece, was put to the slam, just put down. You know, it's not even in a coma anymore. And it was very shocking to see how systematically the powers, it wasn't just the politicians, it was also the academia, because they felt that they had the privilege, they had the know-how to do our constitution. It was also some of the media, and it was also the bureaucrats. Everybody that had an opportunity, because the process was in such a way that anybody could actually put their opinion forward through even Facebook, the new systems, because it is not enough just to try to install the newest version of Mac OS into my first Mac that I got in 87. It just won't work. So we also have to rethink our hardware. And I think from what I have experienced by speaking to people all over the world and speaking to people in Iceland, because we had a really good crisis, which meant that we actually had a very powerful discussion about what we needed to do in order to fix our society. The most powerful voice was that we needed to have access to the lawmaking process, that we should be able to tell the people we hired to look after our interests if they were failing us, like there is a certain major records to deal with the libel tourism horror that I know that at least one Canadian writer has been forced to stop a book about the mining industry in Canada because of that libel tourism in the UK. So we're dealing with international global abuses of laws. So to my great shock, I managed to get through the Icelandic Parliament, and it's in law now, the best source protection laws in the world, based on the Belgian law. However, it doesn't matter. Journalists in Iceland can't protect their sources. No journalist in this room can protect their sources if they ever use a telephone, email, or sit on a bus or isn't that what they're going to start now? So and no lawyer can actually protect the confidentiality of their clients. The doctors cannot protect the medical records of their patients. And we just simply have to acknowledge this. Because if we don't, we can't do the stuff that I'm really, really passionate about, and that is direct democracy. I think that is the thing, the new hardware for our systems, is that people actually have concrete legal means to participate in reshaping their societies. But most importantly, in the process of the responsibility of co-creation, we had a really interesting experimentation in Iceland where the nation was giving an opportunity to participate in creating our new constitution. It was an amazingly beautiful experiment, and it had so many beautiful elements. Like we had, it started off with a national meeting or assembly where 1,000 people were randomly selected from the National Registry. And they got to sit for a whole weekend to discuss what sort of society do we want to have reflected through our constitution. And then we had a constitutional council that worked through these ideas, and then in the end we had an incredibly amazing new constitution. Because our current constitution is a recycled constitution from the Danish king. And we used to be a Danish colony, so I just feel insulted every time I see it. So what happened in the last hours, in the last couple of days of the last parliament, we had elections in April this year, was that the new leaders of the left, they had just created, had elected new leaders there, and the young leaders of the right and the center decided to slaughter it. And we are not going to have this new constitution. We might have some sort of remix of it, but this piece, this historical piece, was put to the slime, just put down, you know. It's not even in a coma anymore. And it was very shocking to see how systematically the powers, it wasn't just the politicians, it was also the academia, because they felt that they had the privilege, they had the know-how to do our constitution. It was also some of the media, and it was also the bureaucrats. Everybody that had an opportunity, because the process was in such a way that anybody could actually put their opinion forward through even Facebook or send emails or send written suggestions for amendments to the Constitutional Council. But the academias felt that they were too important to do it in that way. And this, for me, is so serious, because the fact is that the reason why we had the third largest financial collapse in Iceland is because the media failed us, the academia failed us, the politicians, the regulatory system, and the only way to fix it would have been with this new constitution, because everybody knew what was in it. That is so important. Because usually the first steps in violating constitutional law is because most people don't understand what it is, because there hasn't been a discussion about it. And I think one of the most important tasks that we have, and if I can pull through together the discussions on surveillance and privacy that we've been having here today and in the world in the last few months, is that we have to redefine what is privacy. We have given away our privacy, left and right. Everybody gives away their privacy knowingly when they go on Facebook. Everybody gives away their privacy when they use their phones. We know this. But why do we do it? And I think we need to think, each and every one of us, about it. And I think that we need to find a global solution to it, because it doesn't matter how perfect our local laws are. It doesn't matter. And that, for me, is frankly a little bit shocking. And so it's a little bit depressing to tell you about the constitutional law. I was here in Canada speaking a couple of years ago, and we were in the middle of making this constitution, and I had so much hope for it, and so much hope that Iceland could be an inspiration for others. Isn't there a saying, when one door closes, another one opens? So actually, I'm going to tell you news that haven't been told anywhere yet. This Monday, I was at a meeting in London, and the institution that I chair applied for a grant with six other organizations at the EU about creating a standardization of direct democracy platforms. And we got the grant, and we'll be spending the next 2.5 years developing a direct democracy tool that is scalable, that you can use either for your local communities or all the way up to the governmental entities. And there's been tremendous development in this regard. Now, part of this project is also electronic currency, something akin to Bitcoin, because it is critical. If we want to live in free societies, we have to be able to be anonymous. It's just critical. Because, let's say, you know, I'm not very popular with many governments, and I have made the Chinese upset with me, I have made the US government upset with me, and the Israelis. And these are all pretty good, these governments are all very good at surveillance. And so let's say that I wanted to apply myself in a global context with other parliamentarians. All of a sudden, all the other parliamentarians are at risk. Or if any of you talk with me, you are in the risk radar. So if we, and it's serious, if you go to The Guardian and have a look at how they're analyzing the NSA, it's a fact, I'm sorry to say. And so whenever people say to me, well, I haven't done anything wrong, well, you talk to me. That's how wrong you are, you know. I'm very dangerous. And so, you know, I'm not going to sort of pull myself try to make myself less visible. I see that I have a tremendous opportunity being an activist. All of a sudden, I have a really big megaphone. I feel that if I would start to censor myself, like I know that many people are doing, I would die. It just would feel so wrong to me. That would be much worse than being arrested or something to change the way I am. But many people don't have this option. Many people live in a very oppressive state. And I was just reading an article by somebody in an oppressive state that was criticizing this sentence, this notion, I haven't done anything wrong, that's why I'm going to give away all my rights. What we're doing is that we're validating that these rights cannot exist for other people in more oppressive countries. And it is critical, if we're going to be doing direct democracy platforms, that people can feel safe with attempts to help co-create their societies. It is very important that we spend much more time thinking about solutions, because in particularly in the privacy sector, and also in the when it comes to freedom of information, because we cannot make any form of decisions that are enlightened or informed if we don't have access to that information. And I'm saying this coming from a country where there were not, like, even if the banks were just going absolutely rogue, nobody blew the whistle. because we didn't have proper whistleblowing laws. But also we didn't have a proper understanding of what whistleblowing is. And this is why I want to thank Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning. I want to thank Daniel Ellsberg. And I want to thank everyone that stepped forward to give us access to this new appreciation of what whistleblowing is. And I want to mention that today Jeremy Hammond was sentenced maximum. He was given maximum sentence for giving us access to the Stratfor files, which is 10 years. And I really hope that people will not let this heavy-handed sentencing on this brave young man have cooling effect. I really hope that people will actually dare to stand up against this form of injustice and to give the rest of us accessibility to information that should belong in the public domain. I also want to express in particularly my gratitude to Edward Snowden, because if he would not have had the courage to do what he did, and I don't care what people think about it, that it was unpatriotic or treason or whatever, there is no single individual done as incredible service to everyone in this room and everybody in the world to have this information brought forward in a humanistic terms is so critical. And guess who was the inspiration? It was Chelsea Manning. And now Chelsea Manning is sitting in jail and everybody's forgotten. And we cannot let that happen. The people that are trying to, that have actually been willing to risk everything so that we know what is happening in our world. We cannot have healthy functioning democracies if we allow governments to go out of control. And even the guy that helped create the Patriot Act said that it was never intended to give that sort of powers to the NSA. And I know that, you know, I come from a country that doesn't have a secret service. Well, at least that's what they say. And we don't have a military. I have to grill the Icelandic chief of police next week because we just discovered that in the cables, thank you, Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, we discovered that there is this organization or something called GRPO. If there are any investigative journalists in this room, this is a really juicy task because I've had people all over the world trying to figure out what this means, and the only way to find anything about it is in the cables. But it is a very, this is the unit that the Icelandic police has been cooperating with, and lots of other governments. And I'm so curious to know what this is. It's amazing how stuff like this can just vanish from Google. There is absolutely nothing on this in Google. How is it possible? Oh, it's my little bubble, my algorithmic bubble. So I encourage you to get off Google. You can. It's an addiction, I know. I'm addicted too. There are new and other alternatives and even old alternatives. When I started to live on the internet, I used to crawl, use a web crawler, and everything was about spiders. I much rather have the spiders than the Googles in my life. There are alternatives to Facebook. There's an Icelandic startup creating an encrypted user-friendly alternative to Google. And these are just things that we need to inform ourselves about, and we need to know that there are alternatives. When we create the Decent project for the direct democracy, this is going to be the very red thread that we have in it. And gracefully, part of the project is the organization that creates the internet standards. So we hopefully will have an internet standardized direct democracy tool with encrypted electronic currency so that we can all be a part of co-creating our realities and help change this world.